Come join the conversation, the show that you've been wanting. Keep it real with no filter. Weekly we share discussions, WWSD. Interviewing creative guests, talking the creative process and sharing all the influences from TV and film. Emmy nominated and winning, yeah, they coming through. Actors and comedians too, directors and writers, way more than a few. Masters of their craft, yes, tune in, you gotta see. This the podcast that you need, WWSD.
Welcome to the WWSD podcast. Weekly, we share discussions with interesting and creative people. We are sponsored by Collector's Maze. You can check them out at collectorsmaze.com for all things related to fandom. I'm your host, Seamus. And as always, I'm joined with my buddy, Josh. How's it going, Josh?
Pretty good, Seamus. It's weird being on the other side of this conversation.
Yeah, I know, right?
What's going on tonight?
I'm hosting, man. I'm taking the reins. We have a very special guest tonight, Lauren Defoe. Lauren is a comedian, actress, producer, and host. It's a pleasure having Lauren Defoe on the podcast.
Yeah, it is. Thanks for coming on, Lauren.
Oh, yeah. Are you in St. Pete?
I am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're in the Fort Myers area, so not too far.
Yeah, I used to live in Fort Myers. Well, I like moved to Naples, and then I moved to Bonita, and then I moved to Fort Myers. Mm-hmm. So I kind of like slowly made my way north.
Yeah. Okay.
That was like a long time ago, but I started comedy there, actually. That's where I started it originally.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's interesting to see. We're talking about like style and stuff like that, the progress I've made.
How's the scene in St. Pete and Tampa Bay?
I like it. Honestly, I think for the size of us, we are able to like work together and things like that with joke writing. I mean, this also might have to do with my perception of what comedy is now to me. I don't like when you first start comedy, like at least for me, I thought everyone hated me. Every time I got off stage, I cried. Like, I don't know if you guys know who Nathan Wallace is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me and him, he was like one of my first buddies in comedy, him and Chris Machado, like those two, like the three amigos. And like one day I get off stage and I'm crying. He's like, why do you cry every time you get off stage? And I'm like, I don't know.
I cry after conversations with people and they don't laugh at my jokes. So
I cry in the shower so I can hide it from myself. So can you each tell me like how you guys got so interested in comedy?
I don't know. I've been watching a lot of comedy lately. I've actually been kind of playing with the idea of trying it. I was watching comedians in cars getting coffee, and like I'd always heard like comedians talk about when somebody says something offensive, they're like, "Oh, it's just jokes," but like that never made sense to me. And then like I was hearing like Jerry Seinfeld talk about that for like that was like the 10th time I heard, and it kind of made sense to me that it's just like kind of putting together different, you know, different structures and like just like finding things that are funny even if they seem offensive. And I noticed that I actually do that in my head. I have a lot of fucked up thoughts, and it kind of like made that okay. It made it okay that I was having all these like kind of fucked up thoughts. And
yeah,
it's been really kind of cathartic for me to like, I don't have a space where that's okay to, you know, it's okay to have those things.
Me personally, like I've always just been a fan of comedy. Like even like when me and Seamus were like lifelong friends. And like, so growing up, like showing them like Eddie Murphy, like Raw and Delirious and stuff like that. It is old school, like just HBO specials, just growing up on it. It's always just been a part of me. And I always enjoyed the art form as like kind of like pushing the boundaries. Cause like with comedy, you can kind of say and do whatever you want to some extent. And it's just trying to see like how to turn something fucked up into like something really funny and entertaining. We can get like people to laugh about it. And I always like that as like more of a challenge, like just trying to like turn something and make it enjoyable for people.
Yeah.
Or make it really uncomfortable for people.
Yeah. I think in a comedian's journey, it's always uncomfortable for them too. And the joke or the bit will mature as the feelings change about the situation they're talking about or their perspective on what the topic is. I know a lot of my, like there's a joke that says the joke is never finished. Mm-hmm. So it's just continuously morphing.
And that's the cool thing with like comedy is like you're growing, like your jokes from like your day one stuff is just completely different than like your jokes now. And like, just you learn like, all right, this works. This doesn't work. Let me change this little part here. Now it's like funnier or now it has like a better delivery. I always like that. Like that, it's like kind of modular and you can just kind of really like tone it for your own self. And it's really cool. Kind of grow it.
Yeah. I did improv too. And the difference between improv and stand-up is night and day.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It's so funny how people either like hate improv or they love improv. There's no one that's like, meh. Like there's like a strong opinion about improv at all times. I love it. I know that I've had arguments with people because I think improv helped my stand up.
Okay.
I went away. I kind of like, I took a little bit of a break from stand-up in 2019, like a few months. And then I discovered like improv was so much fun. And then I got back into stand-up a few months after that. And then people are like, what happened to you? Like, what changed? I'm like, improv, baby. Yeah. Let it all loose.
And what was it about improv that like you liked about it? Was it just more of that freedom? Because with stand-up, it's very rigid to an extent.
The thing about stand-up and improv, they're both rigid in their own way. Stand-up is rigid in your writing and your discipline and sitting down and like constructing a joke. Improv is rigid in the way that you have to work together with someone else on stage. So it's not just your energy you're working with. Like long form, you're just getting on stage. You don't know who these characters are. And so you have to base these jokes around these patterns of like character building and all this. And so there are rules of improv that you have to follow. And it's harder to play a game when there's so many chefs in the kitchen. Oh, after a while, you play with someone for so long that like it flows easier. So there's definitely that difference between the two. But I would say improv helped me within the rules of improv. I was able to kind of like pick out little things that drew my strengths, like character work. I love character work. I love like moving around on stage to help with my mobility. I think comedians these days, okay, I'm not like old, but I think comedians these days shit on physical comedy and I don't fucking like it. I love me some physical comedy, some old school, like Three Stooges shit. I love it.
Oh yeah. Yep.
Why do people shit on that?
Because it's an old form. I think
it's probably like seen as like a bit corny or like overplayed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think within the improv, like the stand-up comedy world, culturally, it's like kind of this homogenous idea that intellectual jokes are in. Now it's like kind of a wave, like a trend. So I think people are like, I don't know, they want to be intellectually stimulated versus just like entertain me, you know, at least the younger crowds. The older crowds, you can get away with more, hey, like 80s style stuff. So.
And with your improv, do you actually, you have like an improv team you work with, or are you just kind of just do like solo?
Well, I did. I worked with a few teams in Denver when I lived there, because that's when I got to Denver. And that's, I think I like cut my teeth in Denver. I learned a lot about like writing. So I was an improv team there. And then I actually just got to Florida like 10 months ago. So okay. I'm like fresh to Florida.
Before getting like improv in Denver though, like how did you actually get into comedy? What was like your journey from the start?
I was a middle child. So I think that has a lot to do with it. I grew up a middle child, one of four siblings. So I always had to fight for attention. And so I've thought a lot about this. I've done a lot of drugs to get to this thought of like, it's basically like attention seeking as a child, you know, like getting that validation through laughter is what I learned. And then I grew up as an athlete actually. So I never,
okay.
I was in choir and that was it. Like just to get my grade in the arts so I could go to swim practice. So I never got to go through drama or anything. And then I remember I was just goofing around with a friend and she suggested it. She's like, you should do comedy. And I was like, well, I don't know. I'd have to change my life and it'd be awful. Like, oh my gosh, to dream. And then Robin Williams passed away. And then that's when I was just like, I got to do it. I got to follow my dreams. And I got on stage the next day.
Really?
It was kind of like this big momentous thing.
So he meant a lot to you then.
Yeah, I think his style, like, again, just like the Jim Carrey and like Carol Burnett is my absolute favorite comedian.
Okay.
Just that sort of style. So he was really influential. He was influential for like millions and billions of people. So
I hear nothing but really great stories about him and such a waste and all that he did it to himself.
So. Yeah. That was just the jumping off point. And then my journey into comedy and then Denver for like 3.5 years. And now I'm here. So. That's my comedy story.
And the first time you went on stage, did you prepare material or was it an open mic? Like, what was that like?
The first time I got on stage, I did this joke. I honestly don't remember what it was, but it was about my dad and he's Canadian. And so I was like talking about Canadians and I had like 4 or 5 Mai Tais. Like, I could not tell you my set. I just remember sitting there and I invited like 20 people. Which is the worst thing you can do.
Never invite your friends to your first set.
Seriously, if anyone's thinking about starting comedy, don't tell anybody for at least 1.5, 2 years. Like, keep it a secret because you're going to change so much. So, like, I initially just went up and I think I bombed. I don't know, because no one after that saw it again. They never, I'd like invite them out again and they'd be like, no, I'm busy. Sorry. I can't tonight. And then I remember this girl came up to me and this was kind of the introduction into like some of the drama that can happen. This girl came up, she's like, you told Joe, you're pretty good. You're pretty good. And I was like, thank you. And then she goes, well, just a little, like, I've been doing this a long time and just a little thing for you. No one wants to hear jokes about your dad. So and he can just, and I'm like, what? Okay. Like I didn't understand the social pressure and the jokes.
Was that another comedian that said that to you?
Yeah, it was.
Oh Jesus.
I didn't know it. I think they already quit. Like, I don't know. I don't know what this person's doing, but like,
well, fuck them. Like,
have you met a lot of people like that in the comedy scene, or is that pretty common that are like kind of backhandy and petty?
Well, yeah. I mean, like you guys said, like, I think stand-up is an art form. So people can get really into it and create these rigid rules and boundaries for themselves that they place on other people. But that, I feel like that's with any art form. So you do run into those people that are just like, but I've learned that you just got to find those people that you want to work with. Like forget like being those big goals that you have of like being famous and things. It starts with just that core group of people that you want to work with, because that creates a collaborative relationship between everybody. And then shit will grow just because you're having fun. And that's what I'm trying to remember, because if you put too much pressure on yourself, it's just like, it's not fun anymore. So that was the one thing Bob Saget told me. He said, just have fun. And I was like, I'm going to take that to my grave. Thank you.
No, that's fantastic advice. A lot of people forget that and all when they're just starting out. Cause like, there's like, they're chasing those laughs, they're chasing that, like everything. And then they forget it's supposed to be fun. Like,
yeah.
The people that are like real rigid or like get petty about it, are they generally like successful, or is it people that are just kind of
coasting?
I think I was thinking about this today. That's a very good question. I was thinking about this today, and I think if you don't get out of your head at a certain point, there will be a cap to your success. Like the three things you got to be in comedy is be funny, number one, be nice, and be available. Like, I know I've made mistakes. I've definitely made some enemies, like everyone does, but you got to try your best to like keep your head down and do your work and just be kind to everybody. So that's what I've learned to go through it. Just like, be funny. Don't do the drama. Just have your own projects, put your head down.
And what was, when you first went on stage, like that first night, what was it that made you want to come back again? Cause you said you didn't really have like a great set, you don't think, but like, what was it that really drove you?
Oh gosh. Why did I do that? No, I'm kidding. Because I knew that it was like, in a way, fun. It was just like something, that little hole inside of me that was like, I hope it fills this hole, this feeling I have. It did for just a little bit. And I was like, ooh, I should try that again. And so I like kept coming back after that. And then it just builds confidence about who you are on stage. And it's very addictive.
Did that transform where like, it's not like you're chasing something to where you're actually like in love with what you're doing? Or is it still something that you're chasing? Like,
I think I'm in this weird gray zone. I can only compare it to when I first started to learn how to swim. I've taken a lot of my lessons from athletics and like put it into the arts, and they're starting to translate well. One of the lessons I learned is that when I first started to swim, I was just learning not to drown. And by 20 years, I was trying to, this was the last technique my coach ever gave me, like fix the angle of my hand as I reach into the wall and finish my race. And I had to stop and think about those two moments and how far it took to get there. And so then if I just apply that to comedy, like these jokes are not, they're going to be shit in the beginning. Like you're going to think you're funny. You're going to get on stage and you're going to be like, I'm going to be so famous. Like they don't even know what hit them. And that's what I was thinking. I was like, first started, like they don't even know I'm going to be famous in like a day and a half. Watch this. And it was like 4 months and I still was crying. I was still crying, getting off the stage. No one was laughing. I went to New York City. Cause I was like, they'll love me up there. And I was like, everyone hates me now. My like soul got crushed by the New York City comedy scene. I was like, I didn't know what I was doing. I was new. And then I quit for like another year and a half. Cause I was so shamed. Like I didn't understand the technique of it all. Like, removing your ego from your stage time is the best thing you can do as a comedian, in my experience.
Like, you're connecting those experiences with your self-worth at that point.
Yeah. It was like, if they don't laugh, I'm not worth anything. Yep. And it's been a shift when I filled the laughter tank just enough to be like, hey, I'm kind of like, okay at this, you know? So not about self-worth. It's just about that technique, that like moving the hand, the angles.
And you said you had like that core group of friends. Like, what were you guys doing? Like, were you just like giving each other notes? Like, were you just practicing with each other? How are you building each other up?
When you are a comedian and you're listening to another comedian on stage, at least like giving a comedian each other notes, I think is really fun, because you know when someone's not trying to put, because sometimes comedians be like, use this tag. It's so funny. And I'm like, I'm not going to use that tag. In my head, I'm just like, that's not a thing I'm going to do, but thank you. When you have a relationship with another comedian where you're like, hey, this would be great attached to this joke in this way, and it's so technical, I think there's a level of professionalism and friendship, and it kind of like meets them, especially like the perspective of being a woman in comedy. I had to say it. Oh, I had to bring it up.
Yeah. Have you had any issues like being a woman in comedy? I've always heard like it's a little bit harder, like people kind of treat you a little bit differently.
Yeah, it's so funny. Here's the thing. The ratio of men interested in dating me has gone plummeted like the longer I've done comedy. So there is a special experience that women have with comedy, because like the only hecklers I have are like old men that disagree with me and women that agree with me. Those are the two things people heckle me about. It's been a wild ride, to be honest with you. It's been a good one though, for sure.
How has as you've kind of gone through all this, how has that changed the way that you look at the world? Just view things that are normal to other people. Like, how's that changed your view of things?
It's kind of like micro and macro. There's like little moments throughout the day where you just like, oh, that would be really funny. And then you kind of pinpoint yourself in that idea. And then you end up like the thoughts just kind of start spidering out into like, I could go on stage and do an act out. I could do it. Like, do I want to just do this as a one liner? Do I want to do this? Like, and so I think you have those little tiny moments where like, I'm looking at pasta in Publix and I'm like, you know, what would be funny about pasta? And then you can't stop the thoughts. And then they just keep happening. And you're like, I got to try this now. It's not going to leave my brain until I throw it away on stage, you know?
You have that problem often where you just can't really turn off, like, oh, how do I make this into a joke kind of like mentality?
Yeah. So I think, and this is where I get kind of heady with stand-up comedy, I do think the things that are on someone's mind are the things that they probably should be talking about. And some of the scariest things you have on your mind are the first things that you should be working through. At least for me, like for an example, mental health, I've been dealing with that a lot lately. And I actually did a bit about my experience with death. And like, that took me about like a year and a half to get the thought process together to go on stage. Like, I first had that thought a year and a half ago, like, I want to say this on stage. And then, so it does depend. Like, you can think of something and then say it 5 minutes later too. So it's,
Do you find it like hard to hang out with people that aren't comics? Like, because you always just want to be like riffing and things like that.
Yeah, I think comedians make me feel like, not all, but like my friends in comedy make me feel comfortable with who I am. And like, again, those are the people you got to hang around with, you know?
Yeah.
Those people that let you be yourself. And I think other artists can relate.
Yeah. In Denver, though, what was like some of the bigger differences that you noticed between Denver and Florida? Yeah, like a comedy scene, like I'm sure joke structures and like you would have to do certain jokes that only work in Denver, but they wouldn't really work down here and vice versa.
Yeah, I'll be honest. And I'll say that just in general, the state of Colorado are a little bit more socially progressive than Florida, you know? And so the jokes out there, the type of jokes people tell on stage are more geared towards the type of audience they have. I would say there, it's a lot more of the thoughtful jokes, and they're really funny out there. It's more of like the one-liners work out there too. Florida, you have all of the coasts, you have the cruise ships, you have boomers and the snowbirds, and it's just like a mixture of Disney, and it's like this huge cradle of just like old comedy and new comedy, and it's hot down here and everyone's running around. So the jokes down here, I feel like I'm a little bit more free to move and free to use the bigger stereotypes that like don't apply anymore. Like for here, I make fun of myself for being a basic white bitch. But in Denver, they'd be like, that's not a smart joke. I don't like that. You know, like it's very different.
Did it take you a while to like learn like the comedy scene in Colorado? Because did you have to change a lot of your material to kind of fit them?
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the things I learned most in Colorado, besides how to like the social thing and then the joke structure, is how to produce comedy too. Because producing comedy is just as fun as being a comedian. I did a lot of that. But again, I was doing improv in there. So the character work I was doing with improv more in Colorado.
What are some different things about producing as opposed to like performing as a stand-up?
So I was talking to someone about this today, about how I was struggling so much that no one was booking me at all. Like, I think being a young comedian, you're in this threshold of like building your material and getting there, and no one's booking you. So I just had to learn to create opportunities for myself. So I think out of anything, what producing did is it gave me an opportunity to learn all these skills and definitely support my community, because then people wanted something from me. So I was just like, okay, I got
leverage
to offer. Yeah. And experience. It was fun. Yeah. Super fun.
And how did the actual improv like help you with the producing of it? Like how did those go hand in hand?
Oh, so I was producing in a theater called Rise and love it. It's my favorite place in Denver. And the producing helped me the improv helped my producing because I was always like on my toes about everything. It was all fast paced at that theater. So I was able to think on my feet.
You did mention like you do prefer more of like the practical comedy, like more of that like slapsticky stuff. Like, yeah. Have you had like a lot of problems with like audiences not getting it or just not really like engaging with you?
It depends on the audience. Yeah. Mostly it was hard to do in Denver. Well, but honestly, space plays a big thing. Like if it's a small stage, I feel so confined, but then you can't give yourself that excuse because then there's people like, well, I'll bring them up again. Robin Williams, like, and Leslie Jones did it too. She just went right out into the audience and she did that kind of stuff. So I think that's my comedic goal, to get to that place where I'm comfortable to even just walk out into the audience. What are y'all's favorite types of comedy? Like, what do you guys enjoy watching? Who are your favorite comedians?
I always blank when somebody asks me this question. There are people that I listen to on podcasts that I like that I don't necessarily like their comedy as much. You know, like I like Bill Burr a lot. Josh Johnson, I like him a lot. I like Dave Chappelle. I like people that are like kind of pushing the edge, like kind of trying to find like where that edge is. I like Miss Pat a lot too.
Mm-hmm. Miss Pat's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. And people that talk about tragedy too is interesting. I like when people are kind of taking those things that are really serious and making light of them. It kind of makes me feel like my problems aren't as big a deal either. Yeah, well, like when Tig Notaro went on stage and talked about her cancer, like that was really interesting. Mm-hmm. Like the way Miss Pat talks about her stuff, and she just, you know, she laughs about like all that tragedy in her life. That's interesting to me. I like roast stuff too. Actually, that's also like kind of finding the limits. Like I've got a background in math, and it's kind of similar to that.
So if you got on stage, do you think that you would be that type of comedian? It's interesting.
A roast kind of comedian, you mean?
Yeah, like what type of comedian would you want to be?
I would probably like look for absurdities in things, you know, like the way we live is kind of like it's like not in alignment with reality. I think there's a lot of absurdities in that. I think that's what I would kind of focus on.
Mm-hmm. And what are you into it?
so me and comedy, it really depends what kind of mood I'm in. Like there's certain comedians or certain styles that like I have to be in the right mood for. And there's a lot of comedians, I only like them in certain situations or certain circumstances. Like I like them either they're on like one of their specials, but I don't like them when they're just doing like stand-up, or I like them when they're on like a podcast. So I'm really like weird with it sometimes. Like Tom Segura, I don't really care for his comedy, but I really enjoy like listening him to talk on his podcast. And all, yeah. And it's like weird in that sense. If I was gonna do like actual comedy, it'd be more writing and all, just because I don't really think I'm like an overly funny person. but I do have like funny things I can say or like funny situations I can write. But like actually performing, it's just not really in me.
Like a writer's room for a show or something?
Yeah, sitcom or even just yeah. writing stuff for other people possibly. Heck like situations. Yeah.
That's awesome that it's all done online now too. Like because mm-hmm. of COVID, you can write from anywhere now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? That's cool.
Like as much as people hate COVID, COVID definitely helped the industry go virtual, like even within acting, comedic yeah. acting too.
Yeah, a lot of the actors we had, like they've been really digging like the virtual, like doing like auditions and stuff like that, not having like physically go somewhere, and you can do a lot more of them and it's not as like demanding and as stressful. But you've been doing acting as well, right? Like you do some acting?
Yeah, I did it for a little bit. Acting is weird because I was so used to getting on stage and I had one job and one job only to make people laugh. And however you do it, you got to get there, you know? And with acting, they're like, be sad. Think of something sad. Like, now you have to be happy, be angry. Like, all these emotions. I'm like, I just want to make people laugh. So I was so overwhelmed with acting and like what to do. I just kind of had that moment where I was like, I'm just going to choose one thing and do stand up, get good at that, and then see where it goes. Like, just because you can't master everything if you're doing everything.
Yeah.
You know, so I just kind of chose my path.
Sounds kind of exhausting.
That's one of the things, like when they, yeah, like when they kind of force like comedians to be actors, like I always thought that was like kind of weird. Like it's one of those things, it's like a skill, it's a certain skill set. Not every comedian can be an actor. And like, it's always, yeah, you're trying to squeeze them into.
A lot of people just play themselves. And I think that kind of works, you know, like.
Yeah.
Oh my God. You mentioned Bill Burr when he was in The Mandalorian.
Yeah, that was so good. Yeah.
I was like, oh, Bill Burr's in space. Yeah.
Yeah. The best is like he was giving shit for like Star Wars and Star Wars fans and stuff like that. And then they put him in Star Wars. It's just,
yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, I say go for it because that's cool. Like to just be like on set for a little bit and be like, I got to go back to stand up. Bye. Yeah. Yeah.
Who do you like right now that's it's kind of in the modern sphere of comedy?
There's this girl, Lauren Defoe. She's great. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I've heard of her.
If we're talking like locally or nationally?
Let's do both. Let's do national starting out.
I really have had a great time watching Becky Robinson's career grow.
Okay.
Becky Robinson, I met her in Naples like when I first started doing comedy. And we had lunch together and I bought her a hamburger or a cheeseburger, whatever, because I was told I have to network with the comedians. And she had opened for Chris Kattan or whatever.
Okay.
And we're eating lunch. And then she's telling me all about comedy and how to be successful. And then she's like, you know, we could have been with Chris Kattan on the beach right now. And I'm like, oh, no, like I networked so long. No. But it's been so fun to watch her because I saw her go from just featuring for him, flying from LA, like to going virtual on Instagram basically overnight. And she was on Wildin' Out. She has a Nickelodeon character that she does. Like, so that's probably one of my favorites right now on a national level. I'd say in the state of Florida, I love Brittany Brave and what she's doing in Miami. She's absolutely awesome. She just moved from New York City and she's just so spunky. And I love how she's so just like, there's a difference between commanding and demanding attention and she commands it. See, those are my faves right there.
See, you're in St. Pete. Do you know Bradley Gilmore?
I love him.
Oh yeah?
Yes. That's cool. Yes, he's on my show, my Big Girl Pants show in October.
Oh, that's awesome.
October 21st, yeah.
Oh, cool.
I used to play music with him like a long time ago.
Oh my God, he's one of my faves.
That's cool.
He, I would say he's another one of my like local faves, we'll say.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Jay Legend like cracks me the fuck up. I love Jay Legend. He's awesome. John Jacobs is really funny. He always makes me laugh. There's a lot of people here that make me laugh. Kai Saunders makes me laugh. Yeah. It's a good time. I love this scene.
do you find that like the comedy that you do is also the comedy you enjoy?
It has to be.
Yeah.
Like what Bob Saget said, you guys, just go out and have fun.
I didn't know if there was like a type, because I was thinking about like when we were talking earlier, like with roast stuff, like I really enjoy roast comedy, but I don't know that I don't know that I could do that. Like I would like feel really bad, like saying, yeah. You know, saying terrible shit about
fucked
people.
Up shit.
I try to do that every once in a while, and then I can see that I hurt somebody, and it just tears me apart.
Because you take it too far. You don't know when to stop.
No, wait, you wouldn't care if you got hurt though, because that's my problem. I don't want
to. Oh no, I've been getting roasted my whole life, so I'm kind of used to it.
Oh. We actually got Sean Finney the roast on Seamus.
I could never do a roast. I know my limits of comedy. No.
Well, no, nobody can compete with my inner dialogue. So.
Yeah, I will miss every opportunity if it's a roast. Like.
Have you ever done that? Have you ever like participated in one of those in a roast battle?
Nope. Yeah. I'm a sensitive ass gangster, like Cardi. Nicki or Cardi?
I don't know. I don't know which one of them is sensitive.
No, it was Nicki. It was Nicki Minaj. Yes. But no, I would never do a roast. Would you ever do a roast?
Probably. I probably would. I don't know. I'd feel terrible though.
We had a running thing where we wanted to do a roast for his birthday, and it's just, well, it's like kind of fell through. Yeah.
Like, I think the process of writing, like if you never know what line you cross for the other person, like you have a different threshold than they do. And you're just like having to push the boundaries. And I'm like, I'm too lazy for that. I really like, that's not.
See, my problem is like, I'm not that nice of a person. And I feel like if I don't make them cry, or at least like get them to that point, like I'm not doing my job right. And that's why I'll never roast someone, just because like I'll just say fucked up shit. And
I mean, that's
against the spirit of the roast. I know it's against the spirit, but it's like, if I'm going to go, I'm going to like fucking go hard. Like,
I mean, I saw this guy one time. He like the dude he was battling was like his mother had died. And so like his like ending joke was him calling his mom and like saying, he's like, I'm going to do something that you can't. And he called his mom on the phone. I was like, that's crazy. Fucked. Yeah.
Physical, I was
I was laughing, but I think I was just really uncomfortable. You know what I mean? I think.
Oh God. See, that's the type of shit I can't think of. That's why I would just play to my strengths. Like just simple laughter. That's it.
So one of the things you did say earlier was the after you got off stage, you would always cry. Have you got to a point where you're not cry after getting off stage?
Yeah. I cried after Bob Saget because I was like so happy. Mm-hmm. But that's the last time I've cried. I haven't cried at all in Florida here. COVID, I did like in Denver. I didn't do comedy for a year. I was like locked away. I wouldn't do any Zoom shows. So I cried a lot during that time.
We weren't on stage, at least.
I wasn't even on stage. I was just crying. Yeah, just getting it all out. I was scheduled. They were scheduled. I had already put them on my calendar. I had to fulfill that, you know? But I think probably 2019 is the last time I've cried. Yeah. So
what was it that like got over that point? Like, did you just feel like you're succeeding at a certain point and you didn't need to get emotional?
Like, I think I just looked at myself one day and I was like, I'm wasting so much time worrying about if they like me or not, that I don't have the energy to work on my actual jokes. So it was kind of one of those moments where I had to like parent myself, be like, get out of your head, Lauren, snap out of it. Like, you have to think that way in order to be successful. It cannot be about you. It has to be about the jokes, because if it's about you, everything is going to go through this filter of judgment and bullshit and shame. And your jokes aren't going to be as authentic and funny if you, you know, if you went there. So
I saw that that character set you did at Old Soul from a while ago. That was online.
Oh my God, Frit!
Yeah,
girl. Let me tell you, what did you think of it?
it was funny. It was funny. It reminded me. It was real intense. It was cool.
Well, good, because I was like, I blacked out during that. I did.
Really?
I was so nervous. Yeah, I was so, it was the first time. It was like, honestly, one of the first times my parents have come to see me do comedy, and I was doing a character based off of my grandma, and I was yelling like, fucking fuck. And my mom's there like, that's not my mom. Like, and so I had just a lot of pressure from that. But that, honestly, that character, we're talking about crying. Okay. That character was, I would say, the ultimate sob of my career. I did her on stage at Comedy Works in Denver for a new talent night. And I remember like you could hear a pin drop the whole time. Like they clapped and there was silence for 2 minutes. And at one point someone's phone went off, and in Comedy Works, I don't know if you guys have ever been there, but they have these little things, these compartments that you have to put your phones in, and it locks and you can't open your phone until you leave the theater. And this dude's phone started going off in the front row. And I remember just like dying. I got off stage early. I whipped the wig off my hair. I was like, I gotta get out of here. And like put my head down. No one said good job. Like when you get off stage, sometimes you do so bad that people are like, good job. Like, yeah. People were like, don't look at her. Don't talk to her. She just let her leave. Just let her go.
She's having a mental breakdown.
Yeah. No, people message me the next day and they're like, hey, I just want to let you know that you're so brave. I'm here for you.
Oh, man.
I cried the whole way in the Uber. And then I gave him 5 stars because I was like, he had to deal with that for 13 minutes. Like just me like sobbing. And he's like, are you okay? I'm like, I'm fine. Oh, but yeah, I'm glad you like that special. That character, I've been thinking about bringing her back. So another reminder. Oh, that's funny.
Do you do characters anymore? Or are you mostly just playing Lauren Defoe?
I do act out characters on stage, not necessarily like their own videos. Although, you know what? I might start doing it again, inspired by this conversation. Bring Francis back from the dead. I have all my costumes sitting in my closet. So I might put on a wig and just walk around and see how I feel. I used to do that. I used to just wear wigs outside and going on with my day. And I'd be like, who am I? Trying to figure out characters. But.
Do you ever make like videos or short films or anything like that with your characters?
Not with my characters, no. The last short film I was in, I was just like a store clerk. So it had no substance to it. But the commercial's great. I got a free bidet out of it. So, hey.
There you go. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
That's some perks.
Yeah. I know, right? Legitimate perks.
So when you're actually working on your characters, though, like, what's kind of like your structure? Is it just like an idea like pops in your head? Like, oh, this would be something funny or this would be something be cool to do. How does that work?
And sometimes they can come in that way, but then sometimes like I'll just be talking and I'll do a voice and then I'll be like, I want to do that voice again. And so like sometimes it's just like a sentence that just comes in my head and it sounds funny. And that's when the improv helps, because then you start, I will literally walk around my apartment. My cats have heard it, the end of it. Like I've just walked around my own apartment talking to myself. Like just seeing what this character says.
Neighbors think there's like 30 people in your house.
Yeah, yeah. What party is happening next door? But I think I tend to take more of that direction when I build characters.
Okay. And are you like writing these down? How do you remember like characters? How do you keep them all together?
I think when I was doing improv, I think that I was really learning how to structure characters in a way that if you understand their decisions, then you don't necessarily worry about what they're going to say. It's okay. What they mean when they say it. So that was something that I learned that I was like just on stage very aware of.
Day one of you doing improv, what did you do? Like what's like the first thing that you learn, like when you're learning that?
I remember like stand up. The first thing I learned is like move the mic stand, you know, yeah. And improv. It was like, well, the yes and, obviously, like learning how to agree on stage. But I think relationship, essentially just building the relationship between a character, like on stage, establishing relationship, establishing where location, establishing physical things on stage, like being very aware of where you are. And object work. Object work is also very fun.
What's that?
Yeah.
You know how when people are like, they answer the phone like this. And then I'm such like an improv. Before it didn't bother me when people were like, but I've taken improv. This is not a phone. This is a phone, you know? And I'm just like, you're doing it wrong. No. Little stuff like that is fun.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And are you, you're not doing any improv right now? It's just all stand up.
Yeah, all stand up right now. I think like I just needed to choose that one path, you know. And plus improv, like, have you guys ever done improv?
No.
Ooh, would you do improv?
Yeah.
Yes. Maybe. I don't know.
There's always why are you hesitant?
I'm usually pretty good like thinking on my feet, but as I said, I'm not really that funny of a person, so it's just I don't know.
I disagree. I laugh at you all the time.
Yeah, you laugh at me.
Hey, it's laughter though. Hey. This one time I was doing something funny in the back of an open mic in Denver. And I did something funny and I was like, I should do that on stage. And then my friend's like, yeah, you should do that on stage. And then I just had this moment. I was like, well, they're going to laugh at me. Like I went back to that inner child. And, like, laugh at me. And she's like,
that's the point.
That's the point. And I'm like, oh yeah.
Oh, a comedian, right? Yeah. Okay.
Oh wait. Oh God. I'm not working through trauma. I mean, I have to get up and make people laugh. That's funny. Yeah.
I wonder if you could like have like a meta comedy set that's just so bad that everybody laughs.
I'm sure there are people out there like, yeah.
I have seen that happen before where like the audience is like, what is happening in the beginning? And by the end, they're like, this guy is so weird that I can't stop laughing. That happened at Coconuts a few weeks ago and it blew my mind. I love the sets.
What made it so weird? Like what's the thing?
Well, I think it was like his first time up. So it was just that nervous energy from a new comedian, but he already had such a strong physical presence about him. Like he was a brand. He was a lifestyle. He was very like goth. And he went up there and he just was talking about his life and he was being so authentic and real and like nervous. It was just like, it's so good. It was so good. He said a few things where I was like, you could build on that. Like, so there was like little pockets where I was like, yeah, I'm like over supportive of people to the point where like, it's annoying. I like, we'll go up to someone and be like, great job tonight. Be my friend.
Just so you know, nobody wants to hear jokes about your goth lifestyle.
Yeah. Just so you know, I'm the only one that can tell goth jokes. Thank you. Like, doesn't belong to anyone but me. No, I do. I've always been that way. I was always that person that like reached out to the exchange students in school. And I was like, all the new students, I was like, hey guys, welcome to the school. My name's Lauren. Like, and so I noticed I've started to do that. Like, especially if it's a girl that wants to start doing stand-up, I'm always like, okay, we got to get coffee before. Okay. We're going to talk about jokes. Then we're going to go to the mic together. It's going to be amazing.
I was like that in school too. Like you always get like weird looks and people are like, eventually, like, you win them over.
I got weird looks because I used to drink pudding out of a straw just for fun. Like, me and my friend Chelsea used to do that. And so I think when the new kids figured out we were the weird ones, they're like, never mind. There's this one girl who she hung out with us for like 3 days and then she ended up becoming a cheerleader and I never saw her again.
Oh, it's like in sitcoms. That's awesome.
She pretended I did not exist. I was like, we were friends in eighth grade for 3 days. Don't forget that.
So you did mention when you're in school, though, you had a friend that kind of encouraged you saying you're a funny person. Were you always trying to be funny in school or like?
No.
No, really? Mm-hmm. Okay.
No, at least the way I remember, I was the angry jock. Like my school was High School Musical. My perspective of school was High School Musical. If I was the character that never got into the play and just had to go to the basketball game. Like High School Musical for me would be like, I want to try out for the play, mom. And then she'd be like, no. And I'd be like, okay. And go back to swimming. So growing up, I was always just the person that didn't talk to anybody until probably like junior years when I had friends. Before that, it was just like, I was not the class clown. Not at all.
But your friend encouraged you to say you're funny. What were you doing that made her laugh or stuff like that?
I was doing characters. So I was this was
okay
when I was probably 25 years old. So I'd gone through college. I was out of school for a few years. And then it was just like one random day on a Wednesday. She's my roommate. Her name's Holly. She's amazing. And she's like, you really need to go on stage. And I'm like, oh, thanks. Ha ha. And I kept going. She's like, no. you need to go on fucking stage, bitch. Like, and she kind of forced me into it. She like pushed me that the one little final push. So I think I just drank a lot. Like, and I just have all these stories, you know, like that's probably what I was doing. Telling a stupid story about what happened to me in college when I was drunk. And then she's like, you should tell other people that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
During COVID, though, you said you weren't doing any stand-up or anything during COVID. What were you doing for, like, your creative outlet?
I was writing. Not necessarily funny stuff. Okay. But I was just writing. I was dancing a lot. I was that girl that was just alone in her apartment, like, dancing away, you know?
What kind of music do you listen to when you dance?
What's the mood, man? What are we jazzing to today? It depends. My music is, like, it goes from Mongolian metal to soundtracks to like Disney to country, reggae, all in between. Irish music. What? Yeah. My creative outlet during COVID was definitely writing. What did you do during COVID?
Oh, I'm an essential worker. So I just work.
Life didn't change at all.
No, I work in IT, so I was just able to work like remotely and for the most part.
Oh, legit.
Yeah, nothing really changed for me. Yeah.
It sounds bad, but I enjoyed having an excuse to cancel plans.
Not see people.
I enjoyed being home.
I adopted a cat during COVID. Like,
okay.
I made some big changes in my life. My first week that I was by myself, COVID struck like what, March-ish. In Denver went into full lockdown, and the person of my partner at the time, we'd been dating for a year and a half, and he's like, so listen, I'm kind of done. So he like he's like, if I gotta be stuck somewhere, it's not gonna be with you. Oh, man. And then he moved out. And then I was just like by myself with my cat, which hence why I got the other cat. And then I started selling weed in dispensaries again. That was a good part of COVID. I got discounted weed.
you've touched on this a little bit so far, but like, what's the thing that you enjoy most about the work you do?
Oh, I'm going to be corny. Oh, okay.
Yeah, do it.
I love the people that I'm meeting. Not just comedians, but also audience members. I think my favorite moments in comedy are the ones where people come up to you, not just say you're funny, but I've had people specifically say like, this joke you told, I relate to it so much because, and then they go on this long story and then there's something that you can connect with someone about. I think that's my favorite thing about comedy.
The connecting with people.
Just because like I'm still that little girl that's like, be my friend. You know, like, be my friend.
I like that.
So we usually ask one last question for our guests. Any words of wisdom for anyone aspiring to start comedy or be a comedian that you wish you would have got when you first started out?
I mean, you might be funny, but you're probably not going to be. You're probably not going to be.
You're not fucking funny, all right?
Well,
don't do it.
You can be, but you have to understand when you start, there's such a long process to get to, and I'm still doing it. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not, I don't consider myself a veteran because the work is never done. And I think as a newer comedian, as you go, you have to learn that if you don't like the work, you will not like the doing, you know? You're going to get on stage. You're not going to be funny. And just understand it's not you. It might be you, but it's probably not.
let's be honest. It's probably you.
You're getting on stage telling like racist jokes and shit. It's you for sure. Don't be an asshole. Like fucking be a human being. But shit, I would say don't go in expecting to get all this fame and glory in the beginning. Just you're going to change and grow so fast. Don't be married to the idea of who you are when you first get on stage. That would be my one thing. And as Bob Saget says, just have fun.
Just have fun.
Yeah.
Lauren, we really, really appreciate you coming on the podcast tonight. This has been awesome.
Definitely. We enjoyed meeting you.
Yeah. I hope I gave some good content for you guys to use.
Absolutely.
Where can our listeners find more of you and your work? Do you do Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook?
Yes. My handles are all, well, Instagram is Lauren Dufault is trying her best. is my handle. And then also, if they ever want to come to a show, I produce a show called Big Girl Pants in St. Pete here at Spitfire Comedy. So it's a show where we challenge the male comedians to how much they know about women. The more they know, the more stage time they get.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah, and then we always have a female headliner. So if they want to come and check that out, you're invited. Virtual tickets, too. So doesn't matter where you are.
Nice. That's awesome. Yeah. All right, Lauren, we really do appreciate you hanging out with us tonight.
Yeah, thanks, Lauren. Yeah. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, have a great rest of your night.
You too.
Bye.
Oh, man. She was cool. Like, she's very, very entertaining and all. I definitely want to check out that show. It sounded really interesting.
Yeah, that's cool. That's cool she knew Brad Gilmore. Like, I used to play music with him when I was living with my dad, like, right out of high school.
Okay.
He's like really a really good trumpet player, jazz.
He's a comedian now.
Yeah. That's awesome. I'm not sure if he was doing comedy back then. He was, but he was playing trumpet in a band called Weak Sauce, and he's a really good jazz trumpet player. He used to play every once in a while. It's cool.
But yeah, Lauren.
Yeah, she was funny.
Yeah, she was really entertaining.
It was it's cool that she like got started down here too.
Yeah. Like the improv stuff is interesting because she seemed like she really liked it, but she decided to table it because she wanted to focus more on stand-up, which is, I don't know if most people can do that. They would have that kind of discipline. They would try and like overexert themselves and kind of do a little bit of everything, but her, with her dedication.
But she talked about that. I think she kind of learned a lesson when she was doing the acting and it was too much emotions. Like the way she was describing that sounded exhausting to me, like having to be sad and then be happy and then be angry. I don't know how the fuck I'm feeling half the time. Like how do you do that?
Well, you're not an actor.
I think I'm always sad. I think that's
the secret sauce.
That's the secret sauce. Yeah, that's my secret. I'm always sad. We'll have to go we'll have to check out Big Girl Pants.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you all for listening. If you would like to support the WWSD podcast, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/WWSD_podcast. Make sure you like and subscribe on our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Hello, your computer's still on.
I know. My computer, I can't figure it out.
So there's a little red button on the bottom right. It's just say leave.
Okay, my mouse is lost. Got it. I have a dual screen and I lost my mouse. Welcome to my life, y'all.
Bye. Bye, Lauren. Thanks a lot.